First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
With more deaths and hospitalizations than ever, too many Floridians are still resisting vaccines and instead turning to an unproven remedy for coronavirus. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we're going to take a closer look at ivermectin to treat COVID-19. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, why new moms breastfeeding their babies need to get vaccinated. You pass on the antibodies. But first this hour, on Monday, the state reported 31,164 new COVID cases and 902 deaths to the CDC. All but eight of those deaths occurred after August 2nd. Bottom line, folks, the pandemic is worse now in this state than it's ever been before. And it's mainly being fueled by the Delta variant of the virus. At the same time, a disturbing trend, feed stores in this state are running out of horse dewormer as unvaccinated people try to treat themselves with a drug that is not approved or recommended for COVID-19. This is leading to a huge spike in calls to poison control centers in the state as people are poisoning themselves with horse paste. It contains ivermectin, which some believe is effective in fighting COVID. No proof of that, though. We're going to speak to an expert right now on this. Dr. Chirag Patel is Assistant Chief Medical Officer with UF Health in Jacksonville. They've been on the front lines of this pandemic from the start. Dr. Patel, great to have you back on the show. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
And as we talk about ivermectin and other issues related to the pandemic in yet another very deadly week in Florida, call us up right now, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. 900 deaths in the last few days reported, Dr. Patel. In other words, it's as bad as it can be. It's not getting better. What are you seeing at UF Health?
I think that's the thing we need to keep in mind is even though we've seen COVID hospitalizations have a slow downtrend over the past 2 weeks, overall hospital occupancy actually increases as the week goes on and exceeds 100% across the city by week's end. And that's been the case each of the past 3 weeks. And what this tells me is that some who needed urgent medical care had been avoiding it initially and are now seeking it because they can't wait any longer. This really contributes to the large numbers of COVID deaths that we're seeing. You know, people are waiting too long to seek that medical attention or seeking out an authorized treatment for it.
Let's talk about what's authorized to treat COVID-19. Obviously, the smart thing to do is to become vaccinated so that you protect yourself from landing in the hospital, to mask up, to wash your hands, and to socially distance. The governor came to town yesterday to promote his Regeneron clinics that he's been pushing, monoclonal antibody treatment for people who are already positive for the disease. Regeneron does help people who are positive, but of course, it's not a proactive way to fight this virus, Dr. Patel.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, if you've already contracted COVID, whether or not you get a monoclonal antibody, the long-term effects are really unknown. We have individuals who almost a year later are still suffering from symptoms from COVID. And even those individuals who are completely asymptomatic but COVID positive, we don't know what the long-term effect in your body is going to be. And so the best prevention here is to get your vaccine, to wash your hands, to wear your mask, and to avoid this. But in the event that you do get COVID, monoclonal antibodies are your best option to try to avoid severe hospitalization, severe illness and hospitalization.
Right. And certainly there are those people who have been fully vaccinated who do get breakthrough cases of COVID-19, although in general, these are folks that don't get seriously ill because they have the protection from the vaccine. All right, let's talk about
that's correct.
Let's talk about ivermectin, if we could. I cannot tell you how many people have emailed me about this. This is a drug that can be used to treat parasitic infections. It's used in feed stores. It's horse dewormer. Okay, it's not approved for treatment of COVID-19, although it is being studied to see whether it is effective. Studies on this are inconclusive. The Florida Poison Control Center says there's been a nearly 300% increase in calls to their hotline about people misusing ivermectin, getting sick, poisoning themselves because they've gone to a horse feed store and taken this medicine because they can't get it at a pharmacy in pill form. Dr. Patel, can you please educate us about this drug and your advice to people who are being led down a path to thinking it is a magic bullet for them?
Absolutely. Let me give you some facts, first of all. So ivermectin can be made available for human use, but it's at an extremely much smaller dose than we would use for animals and should only be used for FDA-approved indications, such as a variety of parasitic infections, lice, and scabies, which only require about 1 to 3 doses in total, which are typically spread out over some time. For any viruses that it's been studied in, for example, HIV, Zika, and yellow fever, no trials reported a clinical benefit for ivermectin in people with any of those viruses. The studies that have been done for COVID and ivermectin, there's only been one study that had over 100 patients that showed any benefit, and it focused on hospitalized patients with a wide variety of how sick they were and didn't actually randomize patients into proper groups, meaning that it was a really poorly designed study. Now, counter that with the countless studies now that have been done that showed no benefit, and even one showed an increased risk of death in certain patients. So those individuals who are championing ivermectin for COVID treatment really do so in the absence of any well-done clinical trials supporting its use. And the very few studies that those individuals might reference had a small number of patients, were poorly designed, and were unvalidated. And they used a much higher dose than any of the approved indications, which of course is going to increase your risk for toxicity and side effects. And for that reason, no institutions like the FDA, NIH, WHO, or academic centers across the world, none of them are recommending ivermectin use for COVID management.
549-2937. How much do you think this speaks to our tribalism and our distrust of medical experts, that people will resist the vaccine but seek out a drug based on something they read on a blog or a Facebook group page, doctor?
Yeah, and that's the tough part here. I mean, I think the level of misinformation that's been out there has really led to a lot of this, and it's costing lives. Let me be matter of fact about something. We have very few medications recommended by the FDA for the management of COVID, either through an emergency use authorization or full approval, and ivermectin is not one of them. And for anybody out there who is willing to put an unapproved or unauthorized medication like ivermectin in your body for COVID treatment, but you're not willing to get an FDA-authorized treatment like a monoclonal antibody, Regeneron, or you'd consider getting ivermectin if you ever became sick with COVID, but you won't get a fully approved COVID vaccine, you really need to check your source.
549-2937. Here's a tweet from John. He says, our doctor prescribed ivermectin yesterday for my wife. She's vaccinated, but she tested positive. We didn't fill the prescription because insurance wouldn't cover it. And after a Google search, the antibody treatment she got yesterday seems to have worked well. Okay, let's talk about this, Dr. Patel. A local vaccinated person was prescribed ivermectin by a local physician. However, they decided not to fill the prescription because their insurance wouldn't cover it. She got Regeneron. What about the fact that local doctors are starting to prescribe this for patients?
I think there's a bit of, it's almost, we don't have a lot of options. And so some providers are, you know, making a risk-benefit assessment and saying, okay, let's give it a shot for you. And what I'll tell everybody out there is, for your own health and well-being, please don't put any medications into your body that are not authorized or approved. And if your healthcare provider is recommending something like ivermectin, talk to them about your specific risk versus benefit by taking this medication. You know, it's difficult to say what the individual circumstances are for every patient and try to lump everybody into one group. That's why it's extremely important that you ask your healthcare provider the questions. Is this actually going to benefit me more than the risk that it puts me at for taking for something that's not authorized? And if after that conversation you feel comfortable with the answers your healthcare provider has given you, then maybe it is the right thing for you. I would not give it to any of my patients under any circumstances because of the large amount of data that indicates that there is more harm risk than benefit.
And by all means, folks, don't try to go to an animal feed store and buy horse dewormer and take horse paste. All you will end up doing is poisoning yourself, Dr. Patel.
That's 100% right. I mean, remember, keep in mind that the indicated uses for ivermectin for parasitic infections in humans is a extremely small dose compared to what an animal would get. You are really putting yourself at risk for some of the severe side effects, including seizures, that can happen with a medication like ivermectin if taken in doses that are not intended for human consumption.
Let's go to some calls now for Dr. Chirag Patel of UF Health JAX, 549-2937. Jonathan in Jacksonville. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you?
All right, thanks. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, the 300% increase in ivermectin, you know, overdoses, is that because it is effectively black market right now? I mean, are people, it seems like so many doctors are unwilling to even issue it at small doses, that perhaps people are desperate and are looking for some sort of treatment option once they get COVID.
Yeah. Thank you, Jonathan. Dr. Patel, it's hard to get it as a prescription, although we are starting to see that. Most of these problems are coming from people taking it in the form that it's intended for animals. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, you know, when Jonathan, thanks for the question. When you say black market, you know, you can get that medication online in animal form. Remember, I mean, that's not going to be regulated. And so those individuals, and he used a great word here, desperate. You know, individuals feel terrible and they don't know what else to do. And they turn sometimes to remedies because of something they may have read or heard, which is poorly validated, but seems very convincing. And that's the scary part about this, is that you've got the overwhelming number of healthcare providers around the world saying, do not take a medication like ivermectin. But a very small number of voices out there who are providing bad information can be very convincing if that information is contextualized, that is appealing to somebody. And this is why I go back to something I've been saying for quite a while now. For pretty much your entire lifetime, all the listeners out there, you have trusted your healthcare providers to take care of you and make good decisions for you. We have lots of healthcare providers out there who are making good choices and telling you the right things to do. You trusted us before, please trust us now. And if you hear something from a healthcare provider that just doesn't seem right, ask hard questions and make that healthcare provider tell you why that's the right treatment or test or whatever for you.
549-2937, Jay in Mandarin. Hello, Jay.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
I'm all right. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a comment. I had a question, too. The comment was, I think yesterday on NPR, they were speaking about a doctor in Arkansas who was prescribing ivermectin to prisoners in the prison. And now there's been an actual stink raised about that because they're actually saying that he's experimenting with prisoners. But beyond that, I mean, common sense should tell you, would you take dog and cat dewormer for any virus or anything else going on? I mean, that's just common sense. It's a dewormer for an animal. And my question is, I know this has been a politicized event with people's children and everything else, but my question is what is the legislator, what is the governor, what are these people going to do when enough people get tired of their children either dying or being in ICU? Thank you.
For whatever reason, Jay, we haven't reached that point yet. Dr. Patel, our ICUs are basically full. More kids are in pediatric ICUs than ever before. The Delta variant is running wild because not enough people masked up and vaccinated and distanced. So the virus keeps mutating, keeps staying alive because about half the population didn't do the right thing. So now we're in this place where people are turning to unsanctioned remedies for the virus when they could have just done the responsible thing and gotten vaccinated and worn their mask. Here's a tweet from a listener. The same kind of misinformation culture that led to the January 6th insurrection is at play in this ivermectin fiasco. Ignorance and mistrust is the deeper plague in our society. Dr. Patel.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's always convenient and easy for us to play Monday morning quarterback and say, okay, you know, we could have, should have, and would have done these things. And in an ideal world, yes, you know, we talked about the concepts of herd immunity over a year ago and what that would take. And it was laid out pretty clearly. Unfortunately, we didn't get the high numbers of vaccination as we had hoped. I think we've got a couple of positives going for us right now that will hopefully motivate those individuals who remain reluctant. Okay. First of all, mm-hmm. we finally have an FDA-approved COVID vaccine. Second of all, we've got the majority of our government leaders, including the governor of Florida, saying that vaccines are the best option for us and imploring people to go out there and get vaccinated. I think back to Jay's point, you know, you've got some individuals who still remain very reluctant to do the things that are being overwhelmingly recommended, regardless of anybody's politics. And I think that we need to have proper outreach to those individuals and to try to answer the questions they have. And I'll tell anybody who's out there who's reluctant, please reach out to healthcare providers that are available to you. They will take the time and talk to you about why it is important to get vaccinated, why it is important to avoid things that are not approved like ivermectin. But you're only going to get the information you need if you want to proactively seek it from reputable sources.
If you're just tuning in, our guest right now is Dr. Chirag Patel, Assistant Chief Medical Officer, UF Health JAX. The number to join us, 549-2937. Yes, a doctor in Arkansas is being investigated for prescribing ivermectin thousands of times to inmates in a jail in Arkansas. At the same time, a judge in Ohio just ordered a hospital to administer ivermectin to an ICU patient. Here is a comment on our Facebook page, a few comments for you, doctor. Paula writes, if you think you can self-treat with ivermectin, it means the worms from the horse have eaten into your brain. Here's another comment from Duke. Stop calling these breakthrough cases. They're pretty common now. The funeral at the beaches for a law enforcement officer from COVID was a breakthrough death. Why are we not studying ivermectin? You know, Duke, there is a study going on, isn't there, doctor, with the National Institutes of Health to see if ivermectin can be a potentially effective treatment for COVID. So it is being looked at, Duke, to answer that question. But Dr. Patel, we are seeing people get breakthrough cases from COVID who are fully vaccinated, who are getting sick. That is bringing to mind some data that's coming out of Israel, a highly vaccinated country, mind you, but they are still struggling with this pandemic, which is leading to the unfortunate knowledge that these vaccines, while wonderful and life-saving, do lose some effectiveness over time. Can you talk a little bit more about this and the questions people have about breakthrough cases? Because unfortunately, people see a breakthrough case like the police officer at the beaches who died, and they think, well, the vaccines don't work. They're not seeing the big picture, in other words.
Yeah, correct. So I'll make a quick comment about Duke's comment. So ivermectin has been studied for COVID as well as numerous other viruses, and there were no clinical trials that were validated that showed clinical benefit for viral illness. They are continuing to study ivermectin for COVID because we have very limited treatment options, and it is one of the medications that is being studied. It is just right now the overwhelming evidence says do not use it because it will hurt you more than it will help you, and this is why we implore you not to take things that are not authorized or approved. It's not for a lack of studying these things. It is the information out there tells us not to use it. For the idea that getting vaccinated is not worthwhile because you can still get infection, keep in mind that the way our immune system is going to work is that once you develop an immune response, once you build up those antibodies, over time, your body's immune memory, quote-unquote memory, is going to diminish because there are so many other things it's trying to protect you against. It doesn't mean that the memory goes away completely. It just means that it may take a little bit longer for your body to react and respond when you're exposed to that illness again. It's this concept of waning immunity. And for some individuals who have a compromised immune system, for whatever reason, whether it's a medical condition or a medication that they take, when they did get the vaccine, they probably didn't mount as high of an antibody response as somebody with a normal immune system, meaning that their waning immunity happened a lot earlier than someone else's. The reason why boosters are being recommended, and by likely next month, we're going to have a recommendation for anybody who has had it and they're 8 months out from their series completion with an mRNA vaccine should get a booster, is because of that idea that waning immunity happens.
And mightn't they move that to 5 months, I read, not 8 months?
Yeah, I wait to see ultimately what they say. As of now, you know, the majority of what's being reported is 8 months. It could be sooner as we learn more and more about the amount of waning immunity that happens. That number could change. But for right now, I'm anticipating that next month it's going to be opened up for everyone who had their shots back in January. The point being is that even if you get your flu shot 1 year, you're going to be getting your flu shot the following year. And that's because we have waning immunity. This isn't a new concept. This isn't unique to this vaccine. This is something that happens with other types of vaccines as well. Think about a tetanus booster that you have to get. Or if you're in healthcare, you have to get multiple hepatitis vaccines to protect yourself. It takes time for your immune system to build up. It also takes sometimes a refresher course for immune system to be at its peak and ready to fight if you get exposed.
Rusty in Jack's Beach. Hi, Rusty. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to address the issue from a FDA and education approach. We have been accustomed over many, many years to seeing the approval for vaccines and medications, and I'll take 10 to 15 years. So we have trained the American public to expect it to take that long. And now here we've put together something in under a year. Actually, I know the process itself and the science behind it is much older than that. But for the American public, we snapped our fingers and made this. And unfortunately, the dumbing down of America is successful. We have people that just never learned in school basic science, can't accept science for what it is, and their opinion counts when they don't have an education.
You're absolutely right, Rusty. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And that is a big problem. Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Rusty. You know, Doctor, the spike protein mRNA technology behind these vaccines was nearly two decades in the making. And so it's not true that this was rushed to market. The vaccine is safe and effective. And Rusty's right in that people don't understand science and they don't trust science. That's a big public health problem in this country. And, you know, doctors are prescribing this medication, which isn't approved. People are tweeting us wondering if they could lose their license for that. And would this same doctor give kids under 12 the vaccine, which isn't yet approved? Probably not. So, Dr. Patel, what's your final piece of advice to people out there?
We still have a window of opportunity here to really end our pandemic. If this lingers on more and more, I think we're going to be talking about it just the way that we talk about the flu, and that we have COVID season. And none of us want that, especially considering how infectious and how deadly COVID is. We need to encourage all of our friends, family, everyone out there to do the right thing at this point. We have an FDA-approved vaccine. It's FDA-approved, just like over-the-counter Tylenol would be. If you trust Tylenol, if you trust ibuprofen, if you trust any of these other medications that are FDA-approved, you should also trust the COVID vaccine. Hundreds of millions of people have gotten it. There are very, very few major side effects that occur with it. It's protecting people overwhelmingly and keeping them from being hospitalized and dying. At this point, it is just about having the right information to make the educated decision. And it's not just the responsibility of a few healthcare providers or the NIH or the CDC. It is all of our responsibilities to take care of each other. And remember, if you are unvaccinated, you are not just putting yourself at risk. You're putting those individuals around you that you may be exposing unintentionally if you do contract COVID and are asymptomatic. You trusted your doctors before. Please trust us now. We want to make sure you and everyone around you stays healthy, and there's a way to do this. Please go out and get vaccinated.
That's right. Take a needle for your neighbor. Do it for America. Be a good citizen for Pete's sake. And thank you, Doctor. Dr. Chirag Patel, Assistant Chief Medical Officer at UF Health Jacksonville. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Stay safe, everybody.
Much more still ahead. Later, some exciting news, how you can celebrate 904 Day in Jacksonville and beyond this Saturday, September 4th. That's later, but up next.
Sadly, it is the case for so many women who have complex chronic conditions that they will experience and encounter this kind of medical dismissal from their doctors and physicians when they report their symptoms.
Why are women so often misdiagnosed? We speak with the author of Unwell Women next. Welcome back. Well, British author Eleanor Cleghorn became an unwell woman about 10 years ago. She was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease after years of being told her symptoms were psychosomatic or even a possible pregnancy, to that she was making it all up. As Eleanor learned to live with her disease, she turned to history for answers, and she found an enraging legacy of suffering and misdiagnosis. In her new book, Unwell Women, Cleghorn traces the almost unbelievable history of how medicine fails women by treating their bodies as alien and other, and often to perilous effect. Take a listen. This is a topic that so many women have experienced, unfortunately, firsthand, including a good friend of mine who I work with at WJCT, who received misdiagnosis after misdiagnosis. She was told repeatedly her symptoms were all in her head. She finally has received a proper diagnosis for an autoimmune problem she has. But in your book, Unwell Women, you explain the dynamics behind this in medicine through the lens, I think, beginning with your own experience. Can we begin with that? Tell us what happened with you.
Yes, of course. I'm so sorry for what happened to your friend. And sadly, it's the case for so many women who have complex chronic conditions that they will, experience and encounter this kind of medical dismissal from their doctors and physicians when they report their symptoms. So my situation was similar. Throughout my 20s, I had all sorts of mysterious symptoms, principally pain in my joints and swelling, but also migraines and sensitivity to heat and light and nausea and also sort of mental health conditions or mental health symptoms that were related to the pain I was in. And whenever I would go to the doctors, either where I was at college in London or back home, I would invariably be told that my symptoms were probably just caused by hormones, or that, mm-hmm. It was all in my mind, or that I was anxious or work stressed, or that it was down to, my lifestyle. I had accusations of, you probably drink too much, or even, are you sure you're not pregnant and you just don't realize? Mm-hmm. So after a while, I just sort of internalized this idea that maybe it was all in my head and maybe I was exaggerating, and it had a real impact on my, on my life, on my sense of self. And then in 2010, just after I had my second son, I was finally diagnosed with the autoimmune condition, systemic lupus erythematosus, which is the most common form of lupus across the world. Mm-hmm. And it's suffered by 90% more women. Not 90% of sufferers are women. So this disease was diagnosed in me because I developed a life-threatening heart condition just after my baby was born. But while I was pregnant, my baby had a heart condition of his own, which made his heart beat very slowly And in order to figure out why this was happening, doctors ran tests on me and realized that I had an immune abnormality. So my own immune system was, in effect, attacking my unborn baby's heart.
Mm.
So my care was very focused on, of course, correcting this abnormality in my baby's heart. And they did that through, you know, steroid treatment with steroids and with lots of monitoring and scans. And he was, you know, thank goodness, born healthy with a well-functioning heart. So when I got sick, though, none of the findings about my own body that had come up during my pregnancy were immediately put as solutions to what was, or answers to what was happening in my own health. And so, you know, this diagnosis, it didn't just explain what had happened during my pregnancy, it also explained that, you know, it validated what I'd been through sort of for most of my 20s. And, you know, so many times I thought, had I been taken more seriously, had I been referred for further diagnostic tests, or even just been given more complex blood work, maybe this disease that I was underlying would have been identified, and I wouldn't have gone through the pregnancy complications that I had if my disease, you know, was under control.
Right. You weren't taken seriously, and unfortunately, that is a pretty typical experience for women when they report what their symptoms are, what their pain is. They're essentially gaslighted by the medical profession, yes, so often, told that they're not feeling what they're feeling, that they're not experiencing what they're clearly experiencing, or that they don't know their own bodies. And so in your book, Unwell Women, you trace the history of this, that because the default setting in medicine is the male body, that that understanding female physiology and female disease is seen as sort of other and sort of alien.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. There has been this very long history of treating women's bodies as these sort of mystical, mystifying objects. And it's a matter of, you know, what has been prioritized in the history of medical knowledge has really been the diseases that affect men, not just because men have been seen as the sort of standard and idealized body, but also because men have been perceived, you know, throughout history as being more valuable, I think, than women. You know, even though women have been, you know, prized and often constrained in their lives because of our power to reproduce, that power has kind of been diminished in favor of sort of valuing and privileging men and male accomplishment and male bodies and male participation in the world. So what we end up with is some very skewed ideas about women's illnesses and women's pain that are really the result of, you know, the entanglement of social ideas about women, about who women are and how they should live, with ideas about their biology, their anatomy. So I think throughout the history there's been this real entanglement. And, you know, what we've inherited today in these disparities around women's healthcare that, you know, gaining so much more press attention now and are becoming so much, we're becoming so much more aware of, is that these histories are still with us. You know, we're still being haunted, as it were, by the ghosts of these old sort of residual ideas that women's biology is out of their own control, mm-hmm. that women are not the best narrators of what is happening in their bodies, and that men or, you know, authorities of medicine are the ones who understand women's bodies, not women themselves. You know, we've inherited this, and we're facing the consequences of that now.
Yeah. And misogynoir comes into play, too. It's bad enough for white women dealing with this dynamic, but women of color have an even tougher time. A year or two ago, even tennis star Serena Williams fell prey to this. A few years ago, she was misdiagnosed. She almost died. She kept insisting that they do a certain procedure on her because she was pretty sure she knew what was wrong with her. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't listen. They didn't think she knew what she was talking about. She nearly died. And so even a really privileged, famous woman like Serena Williams faces these problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we think that, you know, women in privileged, powerful, strong women are having to grapple with, as you say, misogynoir, of the, you know, horrible legacy of racist misbeliefs about, you know, black women's pain and how black women experience pain, And in the book, I talk about some of the roots of these ideas and how in the 19th century, there was this idea of civility. So this idea of civility was attached to race, and it was attached to the sensitivity to pain. So white upper and middle class women were seen as having very refined nerves and being capable of a lot of sensation and therefore being the most vulnerable to pain. And of course, you know, along the civility scale, black anthropological ideas that black women were invulnerable and insensitive to pain were of course kind of promoted at the time to justify some of the abuses of chattel slavery. And these ideas, sadly, you know, they persist, that the idea that women, black women are less vulnerable to pain than white women persists today in the kind of biases that, you know, have been proven in studies to be still very much alive and well.
Again, that book is Unwell Women by author Eleanor Cleghorn. Check it out. Okay, some other medical news involving women. The University of Florida has published a new study showing that mothers who receive the COVID-19 vaccine have antibodies in their breast milk, which they can then pass on to their newborn children. Dr. Joseph Larkin is the study's senior author. He's associate professor in UF's Department of Microbiology and Cell Science. Hi, Dr. Larkin. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good to have you on the show. So this is exciting.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. This is exciting news. Moms passing antibodies from the vaccine in their breast milk to their babies. This is very beneficial, yes?
Yeah, this is very exciting. The possibility that mom can help the baby in two ways. One, by becoming vaccinated, limiting the risk of the baby becoming infected, and also providing additional protection by the breast milk. It is a very exciting possibility.
Does this study apply to all of the COVID vaccines currently available, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson?
That's a great question. Our study does not include the Johnson & Johnson, and that's only because we began the study as soon as the mRNA vaccines became available, and the Johnson & Johnson became available later. But yes, the Pfizer and Moderna both had antibodies present in the breast milk.
So do we then consider these breastfed babies as good as vaccinated?
That's another great question. So yes and no, because when mom passes antibodies from the baby, from her breast milk to the baby, it's called passive immunity. So antibodies are proteins that work amazingly well when they're there, but they go away. So when mom is vaccinated, she makes B cells that make lots of antibodies that persist, and she takes some of those antibodies and shares them with the baby, but she keeps the B cells, giving the baby the antibodies. So that those babies eventually will have to learn how to make these antibodies on their own and become vaccinated at a later time. But yes, presumably, the babies are being protected by mom.
And so breastfed children, then, you would presume from your results, they have a better chance of not getting sick from COVID than formula-fed babies?
Yeah, so I do want to, so the answer to that question is yes, but I have received a number of calls from mothers and sometimes mothers being challenged with the ability to breastfeed. So I don't want to make mothers that have these challenges feel negative, if that makes
right.
You know,
I,
negative.
But, yeah, I understand.
But yes, if a mother is able to breastfeed and she has been vaccinated, and so she is likely passing antibodies specific to the SARS-CoV to the baby, providing an additional layer of protection.
So then let's talk about the importance of new mothers and also pregnant women getting vaccinated. There's a myth, there's false information out there that the vaccine somehow affects fertility. It doesn't. a lot of women who are expecting or are new moms, they are worried about getting the vaccine because they think it could somehow harm their baby or their pregnancy. Can you please talk about why it's important for women who are pregnant or nursing to get vaccinated?
Yes, and unfortunately, that is a horrible myth, and it's reflected in the fact of the number of unvaccinated moms that are now in the hospitals right now. So, with significant illness. So, there's no evidence of untoward effects or significant untoward effects in response to this current vaccine. In fact, vaccination of mothers has been occurring for many, many, many years, and it's really common. Moms are vaccinated against seasonal flu. Moms are vaccinated against DTaP, polio. And in all these cases, mom is either producing antibodies that are given to the baby in utero while the baby's still in the stomach, or giving protective antibodies through her breast milk. So vaccination is a very common strategy. It's one of the most remarkable things that immunology has provided to people, making people safe and also making their babies safe. So yes, it is a myth that moms are, our babies could be negatively impacted by the vaccine. Everyone in our study, we did tests with them. They were perfectly fine and healthy. They were you know, as the surveys say, they were grateful for the vaccine with no untoward effects. And research that's emerging from other groups, again, these vaccines are safe and they are effective.
So how hopeful are you that these study results will encourage more women to become vaccinated?
I am extremely hopeful that that mothers seeing our study and other studies that are emerging will go out and become vaccinated. Hospitals, we get these statistics every day where 85% of the people that require hospitalization are people that are unvaccinated. So I understand that, you know, moms want to do what's best for their children. I mean, that's because they're great moms. But the fact that we're getting full approval of the vaccines by the FDA and the fact that these emerging studies are showing that the vaccines are safe and effective, and now we have another benefit that we've shown and other groups are now showing that in addition to protecting the baby by limiting the risk of infection, just by mom not becoming infected by the SARS-CoV, now she's passing immunity to the baby. So
encouraging.
Yeah, I hope that people will do it.
Hope so. Let's hope so, Doctor. Dr. Joseph Larkin, such an important study out of UF's Department of Microbiology and Cell Science, breastfeeding moms passing antibodies to their babies when they're vaccinated. Thanks, Doctor.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And in a moment, we are going to get you all ready to celebrate 904 Day in Jacksonville coming up this Saturday.
The First Coast Free Thought Society Book Group will discuss A Wolf at the Schoolhouse Door by Schneider and Berkshire, Sunday afternoon, September 5th at Intuition Aleworks on Bay Street. Details at meetup.com/humanistbookgroup.
WinGuard, a Jacksonville-based marketing and communications agency, provides Northeast Florida businesses with services to help with their reopening, such as digital and social media marketing, local advertising, and public relations. More information at wearewinguard.com.
I'm Marco Werman. We're living through history, and the world's newsroom has the first draft.
If journalists leave a scene, It becomes a black hole. Then the world doesn't find out what's happening. And when the world doesn't know what's happening, human sympathy also evaporates.
Looking for answers and making sense of global events as they happen. Join us on The World.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Scott Tong. As troops pull out of Afghanistan and evacuations wind down, we'll talk to historian Julian Zelizer and look back on the 20 years the U.S. has been involved there. Plus, we'll get the latest from the storm-ravaged Gulf Coast. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
They helped America fight its longest war, and now tens of thousands are arriving in the U.S. as refugees.
When you fought on behalf of Americans to protect our people, you're welcome in my neighborhood.
We look at the efforts underway to make those who have gotten out feel welcome. We also look at who's pushing back and the pressure on the White House to scrap its admissions cap. All that next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, exciting news. This Saturday, September 4th, is 904 Day in Jacksonville. This is a citywide campaign designed to celebrate all things local here in the 904, especially our small businesses. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Ben Martin, the president of Martin Coffee Company here in Jacksonville. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Melissa. Good to have you.
Good to talk to you. Also on the line, Monica Hernandez, president of the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Monica.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
So good to talk to you both. Ben, let's start with you. 904 Day is coming up Saturday. You were named last year by the Chamber, the Jax Chamber, as the overall Small Business Leader of the Year. So this Saturday, people need to support a locally owned business like you on 904 Day, September 4th, 904, and get out and enjoy Jacksonville. How are you going to be celebrating 904 Day?
Absolutely. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Just definitely, like you said, it brings awareness to supporting our local businesses. And, you know, I was thinking about that. You know, I want to go support one of my customers, the Fox Restaurant over in Avondale. You know, they're a longtime small business, small restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I'm going to go probably buy a gift card on the Downtown Visions website for a downtown. That way I can actually use that on a different day as well. But I plan to do that on Saturday as well.
That's great. You know, I'm so excited to have played a role in taking this campaign farther than it had been over the past few years, along with my coworker, Heather Schatz. We reached out to the Chamber, Downtown Vision, Visit Jacksonville, the Hispanic Chamber, and the WindGuard firm, who created some great graphics for 904 Day. Anyone can use them. Monica, how is the First Coast Hispanic Chamber encouraging its members to take part in 904 Day?
You know, I think mostly will be it's going to be through our social media, newsletters, and really word of mouth, and continue to. I mean, personally, I'll be continuing to reach out to many of our members to make sure that we're supporting small business owners locally. It's so important to do so, even more so now.
Absolutely, and Ben, you know, the pandemic has been so tough on small business. There are more than 2.7 million small businesses in Florida. And the pandemic has put you guys through the ringer. So this is an easy way people can support this community on Saturday. They just need to buy from, say, Martin Coffee Company and then post a picture of it on social media and use the 904 Day hashtag, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, you know, with Martin Coffee, we're sold in different locations throughout Jacksonville. But also, you know, just anytime someone purchases or goes visit to a restaurant in the Jacksonville area on Saturday, yeah, definitely encourage everyone to use that hashtag 904 Day and really create awareness for everyone supporting local.
And we do need to give props to this grassroots movement, which has been going on for several years on social media. What's happening now is that it's sort of got an official stamp on it, Monica, with the Hispanic Chamber, the Jax Chamber, Downtown Vision, Visit Jax, everybody on board. Tell us a little bit more about your members and supporting them and how we can help on 904 Day.
You know, I think with 904 Day, it's really encouraging our small business, I mean, our community to continue to support small business owners, whether it's restaurants, you know, small shops, spas, yoga studios, that, you know, they, even though we've been through a pandemic, we've seen growth in the small business owners that continue to open in Jacksonville. So important that, you know, you visit your local restaurants. I'll be going to enjoy local restaurants such as Mambo's, which is Cuban cuisine on Beach Boulevard. Yoga studio, I'm huge into fitness and health. So there's a yoga studio, but now I started going on Hendrix, Viva Tu Vida. So very intentional about really making sure that I'm going to those business owners and being supportive now more than before.
That's right. Ben, are you going to be offering any specials on 904 Day? And do you think other businesses might do the same?
Yeah, I believe so. I've been encouraging our customers that are selling the Martin coffee at their locations to kind of create a discount. But also we plan to do a discount code coming up for the weekend for our website.
That's right. And, you know, by the way, let me point out that 904 Day is following in the footsteps of 305 Day in Miami, which has been a thing there for years now. They have the 305 area code. They celebrate on March 5th. Orlando started 407 Day on April 7th. That's their area code. And so now 904 Day is coming in a big way to Jacksonville. As we speak with Ben of Martin Coffee and Monica Hernandez of the Hispanic Chamber, this is something everyone can take part in. Seek out a local business this Saturday, September 4th. Buy from a locally owned maker or business. Post it on social media. Use the hashtag 904 Day and promote that locally owned small business. Monica, are you going to go anywhere special on Saturday for 904 Day?
I'll stay local. You know, I do enjoy the weekend very much and making sure that I try new cuisines, visit local restaurants, maybe go to the trails. But really, I'm just going to make sure that I, you know, that I use the hashtag 904 Day. And again, cuisine for me, it's a weekend. That's when I get to cheat. So I'll definitely be visiting some local restaurants.
Nice. Me too. And I want to thank you both. Ben Martin, president of Martin Coffee Company. Support them on 904 Day and every day. Monica Hernandez, president of the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Thanks to you both.
Thank you, Melissa.
And we'll be continuing to talk about 904 Day all this week on the show. It's a way to not only celebrate local business, but celebrate the 904. More about it up on our website this week, too. And remember, Saturday, September 4th is 904 Day, so let's make it fun. Thanks for listening. And thanks also to Senior Producer Heather Schatz, Director Josh Torres, Associate Producer Catherine Hobbs, Editorial Director Jessica Palumbo, and Digital Editor Bill Bortsfield. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.